I've been asked to introduce the speaker for the workshop. I was just saying I met him at a Traditions mini conference in Cleveland in January of 1984.
When it was cold.
Yes, it was 28 below, and the heater wasn't working all that good in that church. And every time I'd complain, Greg would say, "I've been colder." So I learned acceptance, I guess. We finally did get organized about 4 o'clock. We passed the hat, and somebody went and rented one of those salamander heaters, but it took us about 8 hours to figure out to do that.
Group conscience.
Yeah, it took a group conscience. And anyway, what I remember about it was that my sponsor helped organize the thing there, and myself and another addict drove over from Rockford, Illinois. It was about 400 miles, and I knew that one of the board of trustee members was going to be there. And I had this list of all the Traditions questions that ever came up in the year and a half that I'd been clean at that time. And I was going to go get a ruling from the Supreme Court to go back and tell those guys how wrong they'd been. And I don't know. So I got through about the second or third one, and Greg just kind of stopped me and said, "Well, you know, so the Traditions aren't laws to be broken. They're spiritual principles to live up to. And the punishment in not following them is that you're not getting all that you can get." And by analogy to that, it's like when you put your hand in the fire, the punishment is you get burned if somebody doesn't also come along and break your arm. And it changed my view of them from that point on, and you know, it's been a journey of understanding ever since, and I'm real honored to be able to introduce Greg P. now from Tennessee.
My name is Greg. I'm an addict. Good, we're growing. Yeah, thank you. Glad to be home here for a while. I used to live in this part of the country. Lois and I used to live here up until about, what, 7 years ago? Seven years ago or so, and it's nice to be back in Atlanta, although I'm glad I don't have to drive in this traffic anymore. Is it still the war zone, huh? Yeah, that's what I've heard. Anyway, I like to talk about the Traditions because they're real special to me. There was a man who was my sponsor for many, many years who stressed that the Traditions were just as important as the steps for the group and for the individual. And one of the things that I've come to and share about at times is the idea that we read in all of our meetings. And very simply, you know, we say it and say it and say it, but a lot of times we don't think it. And that's our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. And you know what? There are principles throughout our writings that are simple. I don't believe that statement just refers to the 12 steps. Certainly, you know, we have this other little saying we do, that three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to try. And I guess you can build a case for those in the 12 steps. But I've had a hard time tagging one principle with any given step or tradition. You know, I put together a whole big list of things that I thought were either spiritual principles or key concepts or whatever. And the first thing on the list alphabetically was abstinence. Because, you know, it comes early in the alphabet. Not because it's anything more important, but, you know, that's the key that unlocks all our doors, abstinence. And I started thinking about, well, okay, if abstinence is a principle, where does it fit in the steps or the traditions? And the more I thought about it, the more I was going, well, where doesn't it fit in? And I think about the first step and, you know, men powerless over our addiction. Yeah, there's an implication of abstinence there. You know, I start thinking about the traditions. I talk about NA as such ought never be. Yeah, we abstain from organization. We have no opinion. Yeah, we abstain from having outside. You know, ought to be foolish. Declining outside. Yeah, we abstain from outside contribution. You know, abstinence, this simple principle, runs throughout. And it even says so in the 12th tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. It runs throughout. It's the spiritual foundation. I think it goes beyond the traditions. There's a lot of anonymity in the other thing, in the rest of our program too. The ability to become a part of, to let go of our differences, to let go of those things that separated us from each other. The practice of anonymity. So, you know, this idea of having a workshop that focuses on applying these traditions in our daily living, or whatever the title of it is, but that's close enough, makes more and more sense. Now, there was a time when I would have done a workshop and saying, you can't work the traditions the same way you work the steps. And I still believe that's true. I mean, I think about our home life. And, you know, the only requirement for membership in my family is not a desire to stop using. My family that lives in our home is like me and my wife and our kids. You know, and just because you have a desire to stop using doesn't mean that you're a blood relative. So obviously I have to apply that a little differently. So how do I look at that? How do I think about that? Well, I think about that in terms that what that tradition is teaching me as a person and as an NA member is I have to live a life that's open to others. I have to let people into my life. I need to open up where I live. Me, my spirit, my home, my center, and let other people in and not live in isolation and not live separate. And that way, you know, I can practice that principle that's expressed in the tradition in my daily living without getting caught in that, you know, mind game of, you know, well, it doesn't fit, it fits, it doesn't fit, what, you know. You know, one of the things that I've really been struck by the last few years is learning about all this stuff is all well and good, but that isn't living the program. We can learn about the tradition. You can learn about these words. You can look every word up in the dictionary. And I think that's, you know, I believe in writing and looking words up and stuff. I really think that's a good positive tool. But you know what? If you don't apply that stuff in the way you live, knowledge is not going to do you much good without application.
That's right.
Yeah. It's kind of like one of the realizations I've had and wrote down very recently is being on a quest for spiritual knowledge is missing the point. Because spirituality is not an intellectual exercise. You know, knowledge is not a substitute for surrender. And I've said that for years. There is no substitute for surrender. And I strongly believe that. And we go to inordinate lengths to avoid surrender. I mean, we can spend years, anything, but getting out of the way and just living by principles that we didn't figure out and maybe don't completely understand. And that's something that has really become a theme of my recovery in the last few years, is trying to get away from that intellectual basis for recovery. Because I was compelled to understand. I was compelled to try to find just the right words so everything made sense. And, you know, it's more about nonsense than it is about sense. You know, recovery doesn't make sense. It's not an intellectual exercise. The traditions, you know, I could go through here, come up here and go through the traditions and probably tell you a lot what's written in our literature about them, because
you know, I worked in all those committees that developed the literature on the traditions, one time or another. And there's a lot of good stuff there. You know, if you want a lot of information about the tradition, read It Works Out Why. There's a lot of good information about the traditions there. It's a wonderful book. It is a wonderful book. It is much better than I expected it was going to be. But if you want the information, but the feeling, but the spirit of them. Now, I used to say that traditions were rules. And then I said they were guidelines. And, you know, I don't know that spiritual principles are either rules or guidelines. You know, what's a spiritual principle? It's a basic fundamental truth. Doesn't care whether you believe in it or not. Our basic text, it says that the traditions are non-negotiable. That doesn't mean that the interpretation is non-negotiable. God, we sit around and negotiate it to death. You know? Unfortunately, that's sometimes true. But what's so non-negotiable? Spiritual principles are non-negotiable. They are basic truths that always work, that always are valid, regardless of space and time and circumstance. Honesty is the basic spiritual principle. It always works, regardless what we think, regardless how it seems in the short run. Surrender is a basic spiritual truth. That principle always works. Anonymity is a basic spiritual truth. The principle always works. Unity is a basic spiritual truth. Autonomy is a basic spiritual principle. And these things always work. We don't have to figure them out or debate them or negotiate them. If we ignore them, they don't work in our lives. It's kind of like God. If we ignore God, our ability to tap into power greater than ourselves is greatly decreased. You know, yeah, spirituality and God works, whether we want it or not, a lot of times, and I believe in divine intervention, but the real power lies in surrender. The real power is when I can tie into those things. The real power of the principles of the traditions are when I can make them my own. The real power of principle is in surrender and in living by them. So what is this thing called the traditions then? Well, it's about a way to approach our interactions with each other, with society, with our families, with our bosses, with the people that work for us, with the guy driving the bus, with the police officer on the street, with the school teacher, with the guy we hire to fix our roof, regardless of how we want to cuss him out. Because he's 3 days late. I don't mean to offend any roofers. But our traditions are a way of living, just as the steps are a way of living, and they're a way of living in our interactions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. How do you live that? You can read about what it means and look up the words, but how do you live that? How do you live the idea of common welfare coming first? How do you live the idea of unity? Well, I mean, one of the first things that we have to learn how to do to even begin to suspect there's anything going on with common welfare is start being concerned about others. And maybe thinking about something besides ourselves all the time. And how good or bad it feels. You know, I read an article one time about it that was entitled Addiction, the Analgesic Experience, the Pain-Killing Experience. You know. And we're so focused on how good or bad, if it feels good, do it, right? Or feels bad, don't do it. If it burns when you put your hand on the stove, don't put your hand on the stove. It makes sense. It's part of our
I would say tradition, but oral tradition. You know, that's a very important statement. There, I've seen people, when they heard that said, going, oh, I get it. Sometimes I just don't do it. Right, you got it. And that's great, and that's important. But understanding, it's the living, it's the living, it's the living. And the first thing that traditions present is the idea of, you know, we need to stop thinking about ourselves all the time. You know, and there are all kinds of things that tie into, you know, the first step. Now this is going to sound weird. Is a service step. Because what's service all about? It's acting in the common welfare. It is about providing support and assistance and help and things for others as if we were practicing devotion to God. As if we were making it a prayer. Service. Our common welfare should come first. Working towards the common welfare is service. But I can bring service in and run in all the services. Another one of those spiritual principles. It's always true. Personal recovery depends on inner unity. That's what got me introduced to the traditions. It says that, the new readings on the traditions from the back. If any of you have a copy of the thing that was called the Gray Form, which was the rough draft of the traditions chapter of the basic text, it was the rough draft of the basic text. If you have access to a copy of that, I would like to encourage you to read the first half of that introductory piece that was edited out. Because there's some neat stuff there too. Okay. What we see in our basic text and what we have in that reading is actually the second half of a little bit longer piece. The entire piece never made it to the basic text. And if you have access to a copy of the Gray Form, and for those of you that are online, it can be downloaded off the internet. You know, read some of that stuff. There's some neat stuff in that. A lot of it was written right here. A lot of that stuff was written here in Georgia. But anyway, practice in that first tradition. Live in that first tradition. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. It's starting to think and be concerned and live in the common good. Being part of it. Of course, that ties in anonymity, doesn't it? See, it's so hard to separate these things. You know, we're going to talk about the first tradition. I don't know if you can. Because all the principles overlap. I mean, there's a thing that in the basic text that is one of my favorite lines that says true spiritual principles are never in conflict. You know. And it's about the reality that if spiritual principles are truly spiritual principles, if truly always apply, and the source of spiritual principles is some kind of spiritual force or being, whatever you want to believe in, then God is never in contradiction. You know? And so how can spiritual principles be in contradiction? So it becomes tougher and tougher and tougher to separate this stuff out. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. How do you live that? Do we take a vote every time we want to have dinner? Well, a group of dope fiends get together. You know, God help us if we want to go to a movie. I'm lucky. I live in a little town where there are only two shows. You know, it only takes a certain amount of time to discuss the options. Boy, you can look up a place like Atlanta and you go to a theater and they got eight movies at that one. There's another one down the street with another eight and you're in trouble. Particularly if you got a car full of dope fiends. You know, it's as bad as picking restaurants. I mean, how many of you went out to dinner last night, huh, and spent an hour trying to figure out which restaurant you were going to eat in and what you wanted? You know, I do it all the time. We do it, you know, when it's crazy, isn't it? How we do that, you know, group conscience. What is group conscience? Everybody thinks it's that compromise. And I would like to propose an idea to you guys that may be a little different, that conscience doesn't have anything to do with a vote. Oh. You know, one of the things that happened after I got clean is I started getting a conscience, and it didn't have anything to do with a vote. It had to do with me realizing I had some morals and starting to feel uncomfortable for violating them. So I would like to propose the idea that perhaps the conscience of a group has more to do with the morality of the group than it has to do with a vote, any vote that's taken. And I don't think that our representatives carry conscience. This is heresy. I don't think it's possible to take a group conscience and take it to the area. Sorry, can't be done as far as I'm concerned. What you can do is you can get a consensus of a group. You can get a vote of a group that hopefully is arrived at by people using morals as the basis of their decisions, principles as the basis of their decisions in the group setting. And take that consensus, that decision, that vote of the group, and pass on the information. But conscience only exists in the presence. It's like one of these God things. It's like a principle. It exists now. You can't carry it from place to place. It's like mercury. You know, you try to put your finger on it and it goes. You know, you try to define it. Conscience. Tough to define by scientific method. It's not scientific. It's not concrete like that. It's malleable. It's like quicksilver. It moves. It changes as our understanding of spiritual principles and morality grows and changes. I mean, probably the most obvious of our change in morality. Somebody help. Conscience. Awareness of principle. Living by principle. Awareness of morality. So part of group conscience has to be the idea of, instead of having popularity contests, we need to start thinking about things in terms of principle. About what's best for the group. Remember the first tradition? Common welfare. As far as an ultimate authority goes, I don't know too many people that struggle with that except those who are so caught up with power and prestige and addiction. Most of us come to realize that ultimately everything is in God's hands. And I believe that this fellowship's in God's hands.
That's right.
And, you know, the bottom line for me, in many things that occur in my life, is, and I hope I don't offend anybody by saying it this way, but this is the way I feel it. This God shit that everybody's talking about, it better be for real or I'm fucked. Because you know what? If there is no God, I know that I don't have the power to make my life turn out.
You know? That's right.
So you know, it comes down to the choice of either believing or not believing. And I recognize that not believing is a dead end. And I might be a fool for believing, but it's the only shot I got. It's the only shot I got. Because personal power fails me absolutely. The only requirement for membership is a desire. We talked about that one, didn't we? Opening our lives. Getting honest with people. You know, first step, honest, right? Basically, there's a couple of types of honesty. The easy one is cash register honesty. Don't lie, cheat, or steal. The tough one is getting real with people. Because we're dope fiends. We're addicts. And we carry this thing that says, if you ever knew what I was like way down deep inside, there'd be no way you could accept me. Right?
Right.
Does anybody here not have that going on inside them? Okay, so we all agree on that. It's called substantial unanimity or something like, what do they call it? I like to have fun too. But anyway, we got this thing going on inside ourselves that makes it real tough to open up and let anybody in, to really get honest about who and what we really are with each other and become open to each other. And I think this third tradition is about getting open to each other, opening our lives to each other, getting real with each other. And you know, it's not just each other. Isn't it scary to think of our day-to-day living being based on a principle of openness? Huh? Isn't it scary to think about what it would be like to be honest in our dealings with others? Even when you get pulled over by the police for driving too fast, and you know you want to tell them, well, my speedometer said 65. You know you want to tell them that. You know. And you know you're doing 75 at least, huh? But my speedometer's, you know. And that's normal for us. But what if honesty always worked? What if being open to let other people in our lives always worked? What if that was a principle? Huh? What do we do when we don't practice that principle? What if letting people into our lives, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using? What if that was a real principle? What if that worked 100% of the time? That principle. What do we get if we don't practice it? Big hole in our program. You know, one of the things about that statement I started out with, our program is a set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily lives. It's kind of like a set of chess pieces. Anybody ever seen a pretty set of chess pieces? Nice carved chess pieces? If there's one missing, it's not a set, and you can't play chess. You can have pretty chess pieces. You can move them around, and you can kind of work, so we can make up a game similar to chess. But you ain't gone to play chess without a set of pieces. And you're not going to get all the benefits of recovery without a set of principles. And as someone who has tried desperately to ignore certain principles in this thing we call Narcotics Anonymous, I can vouch for the fact that if you ain't playing with a full deck, you ain't playing with a full deck. And it's tough. It's tough. It's tough to get the goodies without playing with all the pieces, without the set. Didn't say a series of principles. Didn't say our program is a number of principles. It didn't say our program or spirit is spiritual principles written so simply we can follow them in our day. It said it's a set of principles. I think it is beneficial for any of us to do some 10-step work on that. To really take another continuing to take inventory and look at how we're doing with principles and see which ones we've left out of our set. Which ones are missing in our set? Is that something like a searching and fearless moral inventory? These things are so confusing. They all say the same thing, don't they? They all describe a process. Wow, and they all fit together. Our program is a set of principles. You can't play without the whole set. Oh, God, isn't it strange? Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Now, I'm just throwing out some perhaps controversial, perhaps thought-provoking ideas about the traditions. I'm not, like I said before, if you want to learn about the traditions, read It Works How and Why, read the basic text, you know, read about it. Look up the words in the dictionary.
I'm trying to give you a little bit of a feeling and maybe challenge you to think about them a little bit. Because I think that's what we're about in this type of settings. You got the information. Half of you were talking about singing to the choir anyway. The other half are probably desperate. And maybe another half is pissed off because someone's beating them up with the traditions and they want to find out what this is really all about. And probably there are two or three other halves floating around here. And the sum is greater than the whole of the parts or something like that. But anyway, fourth tradition talks about autonomy. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. And people look at autonomy as license. I mean, that's the big excuse, isn't it? Group autonomy? Oh, we're autonomous. But what autonomy means to me is being free of limiting factors. What being autonomous means to me is that each of us in our groups has the right and ability to pursue recovery, to fulfill the primary purpose of carrying the message to the addict who still suffers. Each group has latitude in the way they approach this thing called recovery. And you know, I see this idea of autonomy, and sometimes I'm concerned because I don't think we have as much autonomy as we used to. There is a fad in the fellowship, sweeping the fellowship right now, that if you're not writing the steps a certain way, you're not doing it right. There is a fad, and this is going to be, there is a fad in the fellowship right now that if you're not writing the steps, you're not doing it right. There have been recent fads that if you don't know the basic text intimately, you're not doing it right. And I got clean before any of that shit existed. Okay? And I'm still clean. And you know what? I might not be doing it right, but so far, so good. And you know, we're so concerned about doing it right, aren't we? My experience has shown me that there comes a point in time when I have to turn over my recovery.
That's right.
My experience has shown me that I had to get to a point where I had to realize that I couldn't fix myself even with NA. So what's this doing it right shit? Assuming if I did it right, I could fix me with NA and I wouldn't have to surrender. I could be in control of my recovery. Huh? If I did it right, I could be in control of my recovery. Isn't that a contradiction in terms?
Yeah.
Sorry. I hope I made someone in here very uncomfortable with that last little set of remarks, because you know that's one of the hardest lessons we have to learn, is that we can't fix ourselves even with NA. Seventh step talks about humbly asking Him to remove our shortcomings. The 11th step is a petition for power and knowledge, spiritual direction, not personal power, not intellectual knowledge. Spiritual direction. It's not about doing it right. It's not about me fixing me or me fixing you. It's about surrendering to principle. It's about taking the traditions and at some point in the time going, oh, fuck it, I'll just live this way. And you know, we do that on different levels. Most of us have come to a point early in our recovery or at some point where we're going, I'm going to try it for real one time. Right? I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if I'm really going to stay clean. I might be miserable, but you know what? I'm going to try this one time for real and see what happens. What have I got to lose? We realize that we don't have anything to lose, or we've come to terms with that thing and
the third paragraph, we do recover. When at the end of the road we find we can no longer function as a human being either with or without drugs. Okay, I'm going to try this for real one time. Because I can't function as a human being either with or without drugs. And I don't have any choices left. I don't have any more brilliant ideas about how to do it. That happened for me around 5 years. I ran out of brilliant ideas about how to fix Greg. Now, I found some more pretty quick, and I engaged in them to the best of my ability. And continue to do that. Every once in a while, I stumble across a bright idea. Boy, and I run it to the ground. Autonomy. God, how did we get so far away from autonomy? Well, that's sure. We sure went off on that little tangent. Okay, autonomy. The ability to practice principles. The ability to fulfill our primary purpose, which is what's talked about in the fifth tradition. You know, primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Now, unfortunately, we've abdicated our primary purpose as a fellowship. How many of your groups are focused on carrying the message the addict who still suffers? You know. Or do we let treatment centers and subcommittees and special workers and those crazy surface people worry about that stuff? Huh? Yeah. We have abdicated our primary purpose. You know, the addict who still suffers. Here's another controversial little bit. I suffer sometimes, but I don't think that tradition's written about me. Because I got the message, I just ignore it. Or get distracted. I know most of the time that I'm screwing up when I'm screwing up. And I just choose a little more, you know, self-violation. Most of the time. I very rarely get stuck out there in some addictive trap going, whoa, how did I get here? I know how I got there. I decided to manage and control my life again, and I did what I wanted to do in spite of what my morals said and in spite of what the program taught, in spite of spiritual principles. That's how I got there with my ass in the ringer. It wasn't because I didn't know. And most of us know pretty quick. I mean, there aren't a lot of secrets in NA, you know. Yeah. So I believe that in that fifth tradition where it says that the addict who still suffers, we're talking first and foremost about the newcomer. I think with each other we need to remind each other of the message. And the message is the way we live. The message is hope. The message is freedom. The message is, you know, that if you work the steps you can have a spiritual awakening. The message is that you can live and enjoy a life without the use of drugs. The message is, the message is, the message is. We're the message. It's okay to be clean. It's okay to be human. It's okay to live. It's okay to be free. That's the message. It's all the message. Who needs to hear that? The hopeless. The people who were as desperate and as hopeless as we were when we decided to try it for real just one time. And shortly there before, or before then. Sometimes that happens after we're around a while. Sometimes it happens a long time before we get here. So that controversial little bit is, you know, I'm not into, well, I'm the addict who still suffers. Therefore, our meeting should be group therapy. I'm sorry. It's not what I was taught. It's not what I was taught. I wasn't taught that meetings are first and foremost for those who are already there to share their problems. And we have a wonderful format. Discussion meetings are great. A lot of times you can sit in discussion meetings for long times and never share what's really going on with you. You can get theoretical about these topics. And I like them. Because I like to I love to play that game. But there is no substitute for surrender. And sooner or later I have to let go of that. I think topic discussion meetings are very, very important. But if that's all we got, and it is the predominant format here in the South, it becomes group therapy. And it's more about providing therapy for our members than it is reaching to the newcomer or the addict who still suffers. Heresy also. A healthy NA community has a variety of meeting options, a variety of formats. If you're in a community right now and there's only one format, start another meeting with a different format. And it doesn't matter what it is. There are all kinds of formats. Instead of having a topic discussion meeting, have a open podium meeting. It's called a participation meeting. Have a speaker meeting. Have a combination meeting. Try something different. Try something different. Newcomers meeting. There are all kinds of formats you could get into. If you're in a community that only has one type of meeting, and in this part of the country, chances are, if you're in that community, that's a topic discussion meeting, or a what is it, problem discussion meeting? Which anyone have a problem they'd like to hear discussed tonight? Group therapy? I mean, I used to do that for a living. Some of the other people in this room I recognize also do that for a living. But it's not NA. It's not NA. Anyway, enough on that high horse. What's the sixth tradition? Power and prestige. Power and prestige. Son of a gun. Where does that, how come these all fit together? Huh? Less problems of money, proper in our and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Huh? I'll never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. God, that's a lot of words to describe. Stay on task, plan the work, and work the plan. You know. Give up, show up for life, and do the next right thing. And don't get distracted by all the bullshit. You know, and if it's about money, property, prestige, sex, rock and roll, whatever. My whole life and thinking is centered in something, the getting and using, finding ways and means to get more, regardless of what that is, it's addiction. You know, it's about not getting caught in those traps. So the way I practice that, you know, that sixth tradition is by trying to keep my life simple and not engaging in a lot of shit. Now, I belong to other organizations besides Narcotics Anonymous. I'm part of the Smoky Mountain Mineral and Gem Club and the PTA. Yeah. Their meetings are just as chaotic as ours. Except they don't happen as often. They don't imprint on our lives quite as heavily. And you know what? The Gem and Mineral Club has field trips. We went on one a couple of weeks ago. They're in the cold, digging rocks out of them. Yeah, and they're fun. But we try to keep our lives simple and free from all these entanglements. Free from, you know, letting people use all this, you know, all this stuff. And to me, that's maybe the most basic living that principle of the six principles of the sixth tradition in my life. Is living a simple, straightforward life. You know, if it's complicated, it ain't spiritual. God is not complicated. God is the simplest thing no one can conceive of. God is ultimate simplicity. If you had that much power, you wouldn't have to be complicated either. To be complicated so we could dazzle them with bullshit. You know, if we weren't powerless, we wouldn't have to, you know, depend upon all this shit. We really wouldn't. Not to be fully self-supporting through our own contributions. fully self-supporting through her own contributions. You know, maybe living that, for me at first, is stopping being a leech on society. Physical, emotional, and spiritual leech.
Right.
You know, stop being a physical, emotional, and spiritual vampire. With other people, with our families, with society. Stand on our own feet and be real people.
Right.
Act as if we knew what the hell it meant to be a person. And if we're not sure, copy someone who seems to be doing okay. And hope like hell they ain't screwing up and you got the whole picture. Huh? At the simplest, the application of the seventh tradition for me, you know, is that. Is standing up and being a real person in my own right. Now, Lois and I standing up and being a married couple in our own right. And Lois and I and Clay and Lori standing up and being a family in our own right. And caring about each other. And keeping it simple. And not trying to complicate the shit out of it with all this stuff. Yeah, seventh tradition. And not looking at all these outside things. Does it make sense? You know, and I can think, when I think of it in that way, if you want some of the understanding about the seventh tradition that you can read about, but one of the things that really unlocked my door was something that, on that, was the idea that the seventh tradition, like most things in our program, exists on several levels. And I like that physical, mental, and spiritual in talking about a lot of things, because there are physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of almost everything we're talking about. And if I start thinking about this idea of, you know, being self-supporting as being physically, mentally, mental, and spiritual, you know, and we're going to pass the seventh tradition. How many of you hear that in your meetings all the time? You can't pass the seventh tradition. You pass a basket. The seventh tradition is why we pass the basket. To help facilitate us being, you know, financially self-supporting. Being self-supporting on a physical level. But you start talking about emotional or mental support, self-support, you know, you're talking about being committed to a group, being part of a group, becoming a home group member, committing to the group is supporting. Showing up is another physical aspect. And then spiritual is loving the group and caring and having empathy for the members and getting to know people and getting honest and opening up with each other and really letting this group of people into our lives. You know, I used to have, I could do an hour on the seventh tradition. Approaching it that way. Because these basic principles are so universal. They're so underlying and they're so intertwined. So if you want to start understanding about it, you know, stop focusing on the word and open up. That's, if you want to understand the traditions, that's my biggest suggestion. Eighth tradition.
Non-professionalism.
I thought that was it. You know, the standard thing on that has to do with professionalism and the therapeutic value of one ad helping another, and service and empathy, you know, are almost contradictory in terms. A professional is someone with special experiences and skills that gets paid or compensated for providing a special service. And that's not NA. You know, our compensation is our lives. One of the neatest things I've heard somebody say lately about Narcotics Anonymous was we take turns saving each other's lives. That's neat. That's not a professional thing. That's not professionalism. NA and professionalism about are almost polar extremes, because this is about us getting together and doing together what we can't do alone. In desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. All these methods having failed for us, and it used to be a lot stronger up until 85. It used to say medicine, religion, and psychiatry seemed to have no answers for us that we could use. It didn't say they weren't sufficient. I was in a meeting last week, and we forgot the booklet. And so we were doing the steps and the readings by memory. And, you know, I spent, 15 years prior to the revision of the white booklet. And so for 15 years, I went with the old readings. And I swear to God, last Tuesday night, I went just right on in the old readings. And people looked at me and I go, sorry. But, you know, that's where I come from. I fall into those things. And it's not that the new readings aren't better, because they're really better written. But, you know, you surrender to Narcotics Anonymous. You fall in love with this program. And you carry that with you. At least I carry it with me. Professionalism. You know, it's not about professionalism. And how do I practice that in my life? Well, the most obvious thing that occurs to me is one of the biggest stumbling blocks I have is thinking that I'm an expert in anything. Is thinking that I'm a professional at this, that I can take care of it. And if I do it just right, everything will work out the way I have it planned and designed. Move over, God, I can handle this one. My turn, please, 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 please. Living that principle, you know, is the same in the second and third step and the first, second, and third steps as it is in the eighth tradition. Same principles, same basic principles. One of our problems is we're throwing words at these principles, and words are not real adequate. That's why we have to describe the same principles over and over again in so many different ways. You know, is that it's really tough to get a feel for these. Ninth tradition talks about creating service boards and committees.
Not being organized.
No, it talks about creating service boards and committees. Directly responsible to those they serve. And I could go for an hour on that one, too. Please remember the phrase, directly responsible to those they serve. And if you're on a service board and committee, you better be looking at who you're serving. And that's a problem in Narcotics Anonymous today. And I know that's a controversial opinion, too. Ninth tradition talks about us creating service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. I designed the service structure, and at the most basic, the purpose of the service structure is to violate the traditions. Now, I said that, and part of that was for shock value. That's an oversimplification. Please don't take that literally. Please. What I'm trying to get at is the idea there's some things we have to do for our fellowship that would distract us in our little meetings and groups from our primary purpose of carrying the message the addict still suffers. There are things that are required, even at the group level, that would distract us from the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. That would distract us from a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. That would distract us from empathy, that healing power. You know, you can read it over and over and over again, what makes NA special. There are a lot of things that come up that would distract us from our primary purpose. The reason we have a service structure is to do those things so we don't have to get caught in those traps. So we don't have to, you know, the service structure can be organized, so our recovery meetings don't have to be. Our service centers can employ special workers, so we don't have to be professionals. You know, so on that level, that outrageous statement I made, the purpose of the service structure is to violate the traditions, is to do those things for the groups, but they can't do in strict adherence and strict recognition of the traditions. To do those things for our group, which they can't do, and maintain the integrity of their spiritual focus. The purpose of the service structure is to do those things that our groups cannot do and maintain the integrity of the spiritual purpose of Narcotics Anonymous. So, I cleaned it up a little bit. Please don't go out of here and say, you should have heard what this guy said about the traditions. He said about the service structure. And I've said that before, but it's, you know, there is a grain of truth there. And, I think sometimes by saying things outrageously, we start thinking about it. Tenth tradition. See, he knows these. Good. No opinion on outside issues. Hence, the NA name ought never be drawn in a public controversy. You know. How do I practice that? I mean, I'm not supposed to have an opinion about outside issues. This is going to sound really, really weird. There ain't nothing separate for any of us. I know that's a sort of quasi-spiritual religious statement. But you know what? I believe that we're all brothers and sisters by virtue of God. I believe we're all in this together. I believe that I can't make it without you. I believe that I can't make it through life without other people. So in that sense, I ain't going to set myself up for public controversy. I'm not going to engage all of that stuff. I have personal opinions. I have personal beliefs. I have political beliefs. I have musical preferences. I have all kinds of stuff. But I don't have a right to impose them on other parts of me, on other people. I don't have a right to lay my shit on you. You know. And part of that having no opinion on outside issues is my responsibility not to force you into a situation to get into my shit. You know, that's a two-way principle sort of thing. That's a two-way tradition. They're all kind of two-way. You know, what if part of that principle behind that tradition, maybe what about part of living that tradition, is not setting people up to take sides? How many of you have been involved in devastating battles within the fellowship? How many of you have felt hurt by devastating battles within the fellowship? How about when Mr. and Mrs. N.A. break up? And he sponsors your old man and she sponsors you. Or vice versa. Huh? How about them times? How about being caught in between? And one of the sad parts about it is usually that sponsees oftentimes sponsees and grand sponsees and great grand sponsees are more enthusiastic about the conflict than the people. I think that's something in the nature of revolution. There's some sociological truth there or something. You know. It's the followers that are most, something like that. But anyway, think about that. I think part of living that principle is trying to be aware of that. I'm not getting caught in other people's shit. and not inviting people to get caught in your, not compromising other people by forcing them to get caught in your ship. And that begins by recognizing your ship. You know, it's about to put, you know, living life like a loose garment. Somebody once, some real important person said that, didn't they? Yeah. Some real important person said that. Wearing life like a loose garment. And not taking it all too damn serious. That's why the S is on halts. Huh? To remind us of that. Halts relates to the 10th tradition? God, that's weird. These things are inseparable. Maybe that's what I really have to say. Don't pigeonhole this shit and deal with it piecemeal. It all's together. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. Everybody read the public relations policy? Huh? Anybody ever read our public relations policy? Let me know. It's based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of television, radio, and films, and other forms of public media, and MTV, and rock and roll. Airplanes with messages flying behind them, skywriters, kites, bubblegum wrappers. Yeah. Yeah. No opinion on outside issues. Huh? Public relations policy. Traction rather than promotion. Huh? Personal anonymity, level of press rate. Huh? What about all this stuff? What about it? You know, to me, when I look at that tradition, you know, maybe the thing that pops into my head early on in the thought process that goes with it is has to do with me not being special. It has to do with me not setting myself up. Has to do with living a good life. When I'm thinking about applying the principles of this tradition to my life, part of that's making my life attractive. Showing people that our dreams come true. We bought a year and a half ago, we bought a 5-acre piece on a top of a hill in northeast Tennessee. Trees all around, bones of the earth, stone outcrops. Look right up against the mountains. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. For years, I've had a dream of a retreat center. Some of you know that I ended up being ripped off for $100,000 and about lost that. You know what? Dreams don't die. They don't have to die. Sometimes I have to surrender that I'm not in control of them. Always. I eventually have to surrender that I'm not in control of them. All right. But you know what? They don't have to die. I've had so many dreams come true in Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't have to limit myself on that. And that's attractive. Look at you. Look at you. Look around. Look at you. Attraction rather than promotion. Yeah. Something I say when I talk about the steps is something that a man who was my sponsor for many years showed me in a book. And it said, the greatest prayer someone can offer to a God of any kind is the way they live. That's a fundamental part of my program today. The greatest prayer someone can offer to a God of any kind is the way they live. How's your life? Is your life attractive? Others? Do people want what you got? Do they want to become you? Do they want to be able to practice principles as good as you do? Or is your life more a measure of perhaps repellence Are people repelled by the way you live?
Boy, I'm glad I don't have to live like them.
If you want to live the 11th tradition, then I suspect it's important for you to live a good life and live by spiritual principles and try to make your life as attractive to others. Not to take your stuff, but to get to where you are, spiritually attractive to others, not just in these rooms. Live with dignity. Live with grace. Live with care. Live with empathy. Live with spiritual principles. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. Our program is a set of principles written so simply we can follow in our daily lives. This keeps coming back to the same shit. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And applying that for me on a daily basis comes to do with getting out of the way. Of realizing that my life isn't my business, realizing that we're not different and separate, and you know. And we got to look out for each other. That none of us can make it on our own. Mostly me. See, when you don't make it on your own, it don't hurt me anywhere near as bad, although it hurts, as when I don't make it on my own. So the first thing I got to remember is I can't make it without you. And I got to let go of all those things that we use, that I use to keep you away. I have to practice unity. Circle. In order to achieve anonymity, I need to practice unity. I need to unify. By practicing anonymity, by letting go of the differences, it sets up the possibility for unity. By embracing unity, I can find anonymity. We got 20 minutes, the podium is open.
Theodosin, an addict. And I'm real glad I'm here at this workshop.